After the red hat come the hourglass and the human skull. These usually occupy a small shelf along the wall from the hat, though sometimes one or both of them stand on the top of St. Jerome's desk, which is not a modern desk with a flat top, but a sort of reading desk or lectern. According to the dictionary, an hourglass is a device consisting of two transparent chambers linked by a narrow channel containing a quantity of sand that takes a specified time to trickle to one chamber from the other. When the chamber is empty and the lower chamber full, the hourglass is reversed and the whole process is repeated. The significance of the hourglass is obvious. It represents time, just as the skull represents death. St. Jerome is translating the Bible. The Bible is a very big book, and St. Jerome is a very old man, and he has no time to lose if the work is to be finished before his death. Perhaps he has set himself to translate so many lines of Greek or Hebrew text for every reversal of the hourglass. Be that as it may, when I started thinking of the image of the hourglass as it stands on a shelf in St. Jerome's study, I found that images of hourglasses from other cultures were far from forcing themselves upon my attention in the way that images of the lion had done. The only images that came to mind were the semi-human hourglass in one of Hieronymus Bosch's paintings of hell, and the vague and shadowy figure of Father Time, complete with hourglass and scythe, in various allegorical paintings by artists whose names I could not remember. This relative paucity of images may have been due to the fact that in modern times the hourglass has been replaced by the clock, so that we are familiar with it only in the miniature form of the egg timer, which measures not the passing of the hours, but the 2 or 3 minutes it takes to boil an egg. Or it may have been due to the fact that the hourglass was not really ubiquitous in the traditions and cultures of the world. In many cultures, its place was taken by the clepsydra, or water clock, and that it was therefore not a universal image. Since it was not universal, and to that extent not truly an image, it was unlikely that images would arise when I reflected upon its significance. But if images did not arise, ideas certainly did. And I was soon made aware that if the artists had not often depicted time in their paintings, the poets had often alluded to him in their poems. Within a matter of seconds, half a dozen well-known quotations from the English poets alone had floated into my mind. The first to come were the pathetic and haunting lines from Marvel's to his coy mistress, where, after pointing out to the lady at some length, if they only had more time at their disposal, her coyness would be less reprehensible, he exclaims, "But at my back I always hear Time's winged chariot hurrying near," thus conveying in an unforgettable manner the feeling we get, especially as we grow older, that time is actually overtaking us. This was followed by Shakespeare's memorable couplet, "Like as the waves make towards the pebbled shore, so do our minutes hasten to their end." And by Raleigh's solemn lines, supposedly written on the eve of his execution, "Even such is time that takes in trust our youth, our joys, or all we have, and pays us back with earth and dust, who, in the bare and silent grave, when we have wandered all our ways, shuts up the story of our days. After a brief interval came the lines in which the young Milton gives touching expression to the mingled surprise and regret with which he realizes that he is now 23. How soon hath time, the subtle thief of youth, stolen on his wing my 23rd year. Fancy being 23 years old. From a much lesser poet, but one whom Dr. Johnson esteemed highly enough to recommend his inclusion in the series of English poets for which he was writing his little prefaces, came the verse, "Time, like an ever-rolling stream, bears all its sons away. They fly forgotten as a dream dies with the opening day." This is, of course, a verse from the well-known hymn, "O God, Our Help in Ages Past," by Isaac Watts, which I remember singing as a boy at school in morning assemblies. It might be interesting to speculate to what extent this verse helped to instill into me the Buddhistic idea of universal impermanence. No doubt many more quotations would have come if I had let her, and no doubt I would have tracked down still more, and not from the English poets alone, if this paper had been written at Padmaloka and I had been able to consult my books. But even the half dozen quotations which floated into my mind when I started thinking of the image of the hourglass, all but one of which I have reproduced here, should be sufficient to illustrate the extent to which allusions to time occur in the works of the poets. It will be noticed, however, that in two, possibly three, of the quotations I have given, time seems to be personified or semi-personified, while in the other two he is compared with water in motion. Marvel imagines him as born in a chariot equipped with wings instead of wheels, Milton as being himself a winged creature of some kind. At this point, the image of a winged hourglass I have seen somewhere flashes into my mind. Raleigh as an invisible presence that takes everything from us and gives us nothing. As for Shakespeare and Watts, the one compares the minutes of which time consists to waves that come surging up the shingle, the other to a river in constant flow. Though Watts' hymn is, I believe, a version of one of the Psalms, in the verse I have quoted there may be a submerged reference to the Chronos of Greek mythology, who devoured his own children as soon as they were born. Thus, we find in these quotations not only ideas, but also images. True, the images are not so vivid or so concrete as they would be if represented in painting, but that is because of the nature of time itself. According to Plato, time is the moving image of eternity. And it is because time is something that moves that it is impossible to depict it in painting in a satisfactory manner. The best the artist can do is to represent time as a winged old man with an hourglass and scythe. But the wings do not actually beat the air. The sands in the hourglass do not actually trickle down, and the scythe does not actually mow anything. What has been depicted is not time, so much as the objects that symbolize time. In the case of poetry, however, the poet not only describes time as winged, or as born in a winged chariot, but, in so describing it, makes use of syllables and words that are not simultaneous, like the different parts of a painting, but themselves successive. In other words, the poem itself moves with the movement it is describing. Thus, Marvel's winged chariot hurrying near actually does hurry. It is not merely depicted in a state of arrested motion. Moreover, with the word near, we actually hear the downward beat of its wings and feel their wing on the back of our necks. In the same way, though perhaps less successfully, Milton's subtle thief of youth actually does perform the act of silently filching the poet's 23rd year. He is not merely depicted frozen in the posture of performing it. Much the same is the case with Shakespeare's Waves and Isaac Watts' Stream, which actually make towards the pebbled shore, or actually rolls ever on in accordance with the movement of the verse itself.